Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
Finally, we can actually say that moment has arrived where we can welcome back after a gap of a year, one Yorkshire year, since we last connected with the man behind the maze, the man for whom whatever Brexit brings in terms of the farming industry that's being destroyed in this country by the insanity of the politicians, he's still got his maze. We're happy to say, Tom Pearcey, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you, sir?
Thank you, Alex. Lovely to speak to you. It's a bit dark in my room, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I figured that I'd have the light and brightness of a full map of the maze. The kind of map.
Can you share the technology with me, Alex, and how on earth you do that? Obviously, I'm an idiot farmer. That's way beyond my capabilities, but it looks marvellous.
Do not put yourself down, sir, because there are so many magical things that come through. I mean, with a touch of a button, I could literally actually go around to this year's theme and open up a whole range of other aspects, which I know is exciting, Robin Pearce, no end, because let's face it, Robin, you may well have actually been to the cinema yesterday to see the Black Widow movie. You may well be sort of taking those footsteps out into normality, or as normal as Wales can ever be. But Mr. Men... 50 years of Mr. Men. Are you excited, sir?
I was actually going to ask what the criteria was for selecting the Mr. Men, but now you've actually... Hey, spoiler alert!
It's on yorkmaze.com, to be fair. You know, do your research. Yorkmaze.com is revealing this. Tom, I mean, I had a feeling you might have gone for like little spiky balls with viruses creeping through the whole thing. I had a feeling you might be going for a number of other sort of key areas within that whole field. I thought you might have actually decided to go for a sort of full terrorist approach with respect to life and various other bits and pieces, and have some sort of acknowledgement of either that, which is scary in its own sort of line of things there, or indeed something that is even worse than that. What Robin Pearce might well say could possibly be worse than that. Well, probably the most horrific, and I say again, horrific image that you could ever have. If Hello Screen actually comes on board, you can't get much more horrific than that. That is got to be the most horrific image. With the benefit of the radio listener, Robin, would you like to describe the image I've just put up there online?
You've just seen a grown man with extraordinarily bad hair wearing an England T-shirt over a shirt and tie. A man who is known for elbowing other people in greeting and trying to look like a penguin achieving flight and failing under the weight of his own rampant ego. Hello there, Boris Johnson.
Yeah. But you didn't want to terrify the children that much, did you, Tom? Because let's face it, Colonel and Maisie would have been a little bit concerned if you'd actually had that scenario coming through.
I've actually got an idea. We were discussing something about the maze a couple of weeks ago and the Halloween maze, which I'm particularly interested in. And, you know, thinking about The Shining, Tom, how about a maze at Halloween that you do in the dark and you have a Boris Johnson lookalike chasing you instead of Jack Nicholson?
Oh, I'm just enjoying this so much because Alex has somehow got Boris's hair attached to his head on the image on the screen, which is the finest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Never let it be said that we don't push out all the boats here. You know, these radio links have no end of fun things that we can actually work through in this. They're just there and they work. And I mean, we have discussed whether or not this man's hair is actually real. But, you know, it is. Anyway, somebody who's always real, because she keeps it real in every sense of the word, and we can actually congratulate her for now becoming a fully qualified drama teacher, amazing, as well as a top singer-songwriter, is, of course, Cleethorpe's very own Chloe Rose. How are you, Chloe?
Yay! Hello, I am very good. It is great to be back to see you again. I've missed you, and I've missed talking to everybody and catching up. So thanks for having me.
Well, Chloe, you've also been double jabbed now. You've had your second vaccination. So Tom Piercy might, if you're very good, let you in his maze.
Oh, yeah, well, that would be lovely.
Yeah, the only person that's not allowed in is the guy behind you, Alex.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, we can't stand it anymore. I mean, it's too much and too much of a shock. I mean, it quite frankly actually gets you to such an extent that it just lifts you all over the place. And frankly, I cannot cope anymore with this particular aspect at all. So we say goodbye to Carrie and goodbye to the person that she's paired up with from that point of view. Sorry, Robin, but sometimes we just have to sort of move on with this. Tom, let's get back to your good self. It's been a tough year, still continues to be. We are all systems go, presumably, for the maze opening. What's the state of play? Share with us.
We're absolutely flat out at the minute. I've just dashed into the office to catch up with you guys. Obviously, I've done a great job of missing our last two appointments, I think, Alex. Shame be poured
Tom,
upon
Tom,
me.
We don't throw people under the bus here unless they're from Wales or their royal correspondents. Other than that, all's well with the world.
So, yes, to be honest, it's incredibly intense because we've kind of just got out of the swing. You know, we're a seasonal attraction. We only open summer and Halloween. And we missed last summer. So effectively, it's almost 2 years since we were fully operational and just trying to get everything back on track. And as COVID hit, we're in the middle of some massive renovations on site. So we'd started to build an entirely new Cro-Mania ride, which we pulled the plug on sort of as COVID started. And then we've had to pick all the work back up on that and get the teams back in and finish building that, which I'm glad to report. We have just done a run through this morning and all the giant animatronics work and the flame effects work. And it's actually, dare I say it, Disney-esque, this ride. Disney-esque.
Ooh. It sounds, as I say, once you mentioned flame effects, I instantly thought it must be the Chloe Rowe stage show. Chloe, have you ever been to the York Maze? I'm not sure whether you have.
I actually haven't, and I feel terrible for that because I've always heard how good the York Maze is, but I've never actually been myself. But I went on the website and I've seen that you've got the Mr. Men and is it Mr. Men and Miss? Oh, I can't think of how
Little
to
Miss.
Say it.
Little Miss,
that's it. And is it something then for like a family event? Because I think that's something I'd love to go with my sister and my nieces as well. I think she'd absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's for all ages. We've got, obviously, the giant maze is the big thing that we do, but there are like 20 other ride shows and attractions. And like I was just saying to the guys, that the big thing is this new trailer ride, which effectively, you'll like this one, Chloe. It's Ooh. Basically a panto on wheels.
Wow, that so is fabulous. I love panto.
We have these big trailers that take 100 people at a time, and then you drive around this scenic route and you stop at little scenes and meet actors, and then there's a bit of scenario. Basically, there's lots of crows that jump out and attack you, and the crows are now armed with huge water cannons. Boris would like that. So they jump out, fire water at the trailer. You have cannons to fire water back. You meet a scarecrow, you meet a mad professor, and the big finale is you meet the arch, my nemesis, the arch villain of the maze, the Crow Man. And the Crow Man, unfortunately, has been in isolation for far too long and has developed some sort of alter ego showbiz personality where he now calls himself the greatest Crow Man and sings musicals all through the set.
I love that. That'll be ace. Well, that is definitely something I would see.
And as you can see, Tom, if we look around the whole sort of system, Chloe's already, with respect to her latest routine, see Chloe Rose, obviously sort of working through that process too. So, you know, maybe we could actually have some live music there one of these days. It's just a thought.
That would be awesome.
I think a duet, Chloe, with the Crow Man is your destiny.
Oh, absolutely. I think this is it. This is the break, you know. I love it.
Meanwhile, back with Robin, who's probably sort of quite confused and bemused by what's going on in this particular part of Yorkshire, or indeed, well, actually, no, actually, Chloe, you're Lincolnshire. Are you Cleethorpes? Is Lincolnshire Yorkshire? Where do you pitch yourself?
Lincolnshire is I'd say Cleethorpes Way. I say always Lincolnshire Rose. So, yeah, it's definitely Lincolnshire Way. But, you know, there's Humberside as well. So I'm sort of in between. I could say both, really.
This is very true. So let's move on. Robin, thoughts and questions from yourself?
Well, I'm a little bit concerned that I'm sure I heard Tom say that there were flame effects in a maze. Now, is that actual flames or flame effects?
For Californian visitors, Robin, to keep them warm.
Robin, we're quite safe. The plants are fully green in the middle of summer, so it's hard to set fire to them. So they are real flames, and they're part of a... basically, we've built a giant robotic scarecrow. So we've got a 9-foot-high scarecrow robot designed to help scare away the crowman.
There, right now. Giant robotic scarecrows, flame effect, mazes. Why am I not there right now?
Because we're not open yet, Robin.
Oh, darn it.
When are you open? When?
A week on Saturday is opening day. A week on Saturday.
Brilliant.
How do you feel about the current situation, turning a little bit more serious just for a second? Because they say that Freedom Day is the 19th. But of course, if cases go up, it might not be. So it's kind of like the Schrodinger's cat of mazes at the moment. It's just as likely to be open to everybody as it is to be restricted opening. How do you plan for that? I mean, do you have a contingency if Boris does yet another, you know, vertigo-inducing spin round?
Robin, it's such fun trying to plan a business in the current environment you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, fun is the operative phrase, Tom. You know, exactly. F-U-N.
I think that you and I need to discuss our differing definitions of fun.
If it weren't for copious amounts of alcohol, Robin, I'm not sure how I'd be coping at the minute. Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, it's bloody difficult because we're not quite sure what we're facing. We're not sure how many staff we're going to have, you know. And to be honest, I've stopped trying to plan anything beyond tomorrow.
You cannot second guess this kind of insanity, can you?
No. So all we can do is work to what's happening tomorrow. Yeah. The difficult bit, we've got 2 days of supposed old rules of opening. We open on the 17th. It's supposed to be do what you like on the 19th. But my view is...
like a G7 conference.
Yeah. Well, my view is we're going to try and do...
Would that be like 50 people per ride on the first 2 days, then increasing to 100?
In theory.
Yeah.
In theory. But the problem is, Robin, that the guidance is scant, to say the least. And
scant, confusing.
What they're saying now
contradicts itself.
Yeah. Do a risk assessment, and that's all you need to do. Well.
And on that note, we have to sort of move on to obviously the Mr. Men theme, because clearly they would do a much better job of running the country than the current incumbents, as would Little Miss. So are there any thoughts and rationale, other than the 50th anniversary of this, that kind of have led you from your previous science fiction era of Thunderbirds and James Bond and Star Trek and Harry Potter and all of those greats to, of course, the joys of the Mr. Men? And well,
part of the reason for doing Mr. Men is that they just make you smile, don't they? And I think kind of everybody wants a little bit of brevity and happiness and fun back in their lives. So I thought the Mr. Men is perfect. It's 50 years, you know, all generations love the Mr. Men. And I feel what I should have done was put in the Yorkshire character, Mr. Wazzock, into the maze in honour of Boris Johnson. I've let that opportunity slip.
Yeah, I think certainly. Well, I mean, we could have actually referred to obviously the current day St. Paul, having had a Damascus conversion of Dominic Cummings. I mean, he could have been a celebrity to have opened up things, and I'm sure he would have actually opened up things. Michael Gove, I believe, is available these days, or at least his wife is, one of the two. I don't know, ex-wife possibly. Still, nice to see that things are going. Chloe, were you a Mr. Man or Little Miss follower? Has this floated your boat? I mean, is it something you share with your school children?
Well, it is something I've not shared with my school children, but it is something that I, you know, I have actually experienced from being a young child. I used to have all the Mr. Men and the Little Miss books from being young, and my mum used to like read them to me, and my sister had them as well. So it's quite a traditional thing, and I feel like it's something that we can all relate to, you know, from different ages, really, to young people, to, you know, I'm getting on a bit now, getting to 30 nearly, so, you know, you're getting good age groups there. Yeah, very good. Yeah, so
and as Tom and Robin will say, once you get to 30, Logan's Run, it's the end of everything, basically. I mean, it's renewal.
Renew.
That's our way forward. I mean, Tom, personally, if I'm being brutally honest, I would have loved to have seen a Trumpton theme maze with Hugh, Pew, Barney McGrew, Cuthbert, Dibble, and Grub. But that's
what about Donald?
What about what, Robin?
What about Donald?
I'm with Robin on this one. I think that it's far too close to the Don.
Exactly.
Well, yes, but
American tourists would go nowhere near, or the ones that would, you just don't want them there.
It's very difficult. Tom, the year, as you said, has been challenging. We talked about staff. Normally you recruit from undergraduates, and clearly there are Europeans as well from that point of view. Is it a case of, well, we can't have the Europeans in because Priti Patel's cleared that line from that point of view, and that bollard is gone. In terms of staffing, how are you coping with that?
In theory, okay. We've had enough applicants. We've had a lot of applicants. Training starts on Monday, so we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. We've still got enough, but the thing is, effectively, we probably need a team A and team B, and we haven't got enough for sort of, you know, the reserve team. So, yeah, to be honest, because we're such a short season, we've never actually had to rely on European help previously. So certainly the Brexit side of things hasn't. I haven't noticed any effect on that side of things, fortunately. But certainly people my friends in the agricultural sector have.
And we could go there for another line entirely, but we won't, because let's face it, you've got the Great Yorkshire Show, and that's probably taking place. And so it's all very wonderful. Chloe, any questions you'd like to put to the Chief Executive Officer of York Maize, creator of York Maize, who basically Absolutely. We can now look back and say, foot and mouth, that was just a walk in the park compared to COVID. You know, that was just such a little aperitif, an appetizer for the beginning of the 21st century, foot and mouth was. Chloe, questions from yourself.
I would like to know how, you know, how it came about that you were, that, you know, the executive of York Maize. You know, what was your journey before then? How did you start your career? You know, I'm interested to know your journey.
I was just a simple farmer, Chloe. And diversified into opening a small corn maize as a little bit of cash on the side, and it all got a bit out of hand. And so now we're a fully blown visitor attraction, and I don't do any farming anymore.
Wow.
Europe's biggest maize.
Yeah,
Europe's biggest maize. And Jessica Burtis, I know, who I thought might be joining us, but maybe she's in North Carolina. Maybe it's the time zones are having challenges with her. That she was very excited. Well, just share with us, Tom. I mean, I think we've got two folk here who maybe, if we ever do get back to doing some location reports, frankly, I don't know. Maybe it'll all be virtual now. But it may well be that Robin and Chloe could be part of the team that come in a social distanced way to York Maize. What would you say we should be prepped for?
The new finale, Alex, and you'll enjoy this one. So we've created a big new end-of-day party event called the Cornival, because everything has to be based around corn. So it's like a carnival, but made of corn. So it's called the Cornival. And it ends with a giant foam cannon, which has just arrived by the pallet delivery this morning. So I need to get my foam cannon out and test it. So basically we're gonna fire oodles of foam out onto the park, and everyone's gonna go home looking like a snowman.
That sounds ace.
Yes, if not a little bit terrifying for a moment that I was having a little flashback to the other evening. And I was thinking, where are we going with this? But still, never mind. It's all part and parcel of the whole thing. And I know that Chloe was very keen to obviously promote the lads. In fact, back in the day with Tessa Snart and various other things, she could actually be seen wearing a General England shirt long before anything could actually be happening there. Yeah, exactly. It was just a whole new wonderful world of life and times and various other things. That, of course, Tom, was when Tom was wearing, was when Chloe was the official Miss Lincolnshire. And of course, once you've worn the banner of Miss Lincolnshire, you never stop being Miss Lincolnshire. That's the way forward. It's clear.
I'll let you all into a little secret. I'm the current holder of the Mr. York Mays title.
Wow.
Wow. Mr. York. Well, there you go. Mr. York Mays.
I've actually won it for the last 15 years in succession.
No, it's yeah. And yet, as yet, Tom, I don't think I've seen you wear the sash, which surely would have been part and parcel of the whole thing.
I need
the
sash. I don't like to brag about it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I like that. He's not too arrogant. He just, you know, thinks he's York Mays. Everyone should know he's Mr. York Mays.
Robin, anything from yourself?
I'm just astounded here that I feel I'm the ordinary Joe among, you know, Miss Lincolnshire, Mr. York Mays, and of course Mr. Showbiz himself. I was just wondering from a practical point of view, Tom. Now you've got a massive cornfield which, you know, goes off into infinity. As soon as you've cut the maze itself into a walkable attraction, how much maintenance does it take after that for you to, you know, keep level, keep, you know, keep it looking good?
Until the public arrive, absolutely none. But it all goes downhill from the day we open. It's full on. The maze, actually, the plants are quite fragile. So they're very big and impressive, but they don't need much of a pull from a young child or a push from a group of boys to push their
friends. Or a Tory politician, let's face it, Tom.
Yeah, she's not welcome here either. So, yeah, and the worst bit is when the cobs come out onto the stalks, everyone loves to pull the cobs off, and then they strip all the leaves off the cob to see the cob, and then they throw that. So basically the paths end up covered in leaves and corn cobs. So I have a team of people that go around all day, every day, sweeping the paths off and picking plants up and trying to repair the damage. Because if you don't keep on top of it very quickly, it looks like a tornado has been through, and that just encourages sort of further, you know, disregard for it all. So I'm quite
A sense of pride. You want your last visitor of the season to have as close to as possible to the same experience as the first visitor of the season, don't you?
Robin, have you been to my staff training sessions?
No. Actually, here's a secret I'll let you into. I worked for 37 years in the agriculture department here in Wales.
You see, Tom, I don't just randomly select these midweek drivettes to join us on the session, basically. These have been thought through. I mean, at least, you know, that line that we used to use saying, Tom, we've known each other for over, you know, 15 years or thereabouts. You still haven't made it to the Siren Studios. You don't have to say that now, because obviously we may never get back to the Siren Studios. So it's all done. At least we can actually use technology to work through that. Anyway, absolutely. Chloe, any closing thoughts for Tom?
I'm trying to think. My mind's gone.
It is, as I say, notable that actually once you've had your second jab, there are moments, as indeed Professor Jason Whittaker will say, where you suddenly start phasing off. Have you had any side effects as yet from now having had your second jab, Chloe?
Not yet so far, but my first jab, I just had an achy arm on one side and it lasted for about 3 days and that was it. But people either say you either feel ill on the first jab or the second, so fingers crossed I'll be all in one piece by the end of the week, but we'll find out. Tom, have you had your jab then?
I love Chloe. She obviously thinks I look so young that I wouldn't have had to by now.
Chloe,
I've had mine for months.
Well, that's brilliant. Well, absolutely. I thought you were 30 years young, 20 years young. There you go.
Anyway, I think Chloe, being telling you into song and dance, I think you should come and join in the carnival at the end of the day, because we do dance routines with the Sweet Corn characters and our new mascot, the crow, Russell Crowe, who is a giant crow mascot character. And can you think of what dances, what corn-based dances may be available for you at the end of the day?
Oh, corn-based dances.
The Macarena, perhaps?
Oh, yeah.
Well done, Alex. That's one of them. The Macarena, it's called.
Oh, well, I like Alex. It, the Macarena.
There's a more that's obvious one, Alex. Come on. Robin, you can do this. One really obvious corn-based dance.
Corn-based dance.
The corn.
That's in there, but it's not the one we're thinking of.
Not the one.
Hang on a second.
The clock is ticking, Robin. The clock is ticking.
Come on and do the...
Corn.
I am not good for dancing.
Right, come on, think of this one. Black lace. Ooh, come on and do the...
Yeah, you see, we talk about Agadoo, which is a whole different generation in many ways, and many people have actually tried to block that out of their whole system. But what would Agadoo, of course, and Black Lace have actually come up in terms of corn? Robin, I mean...
Come and do the conga.
I have no idea.
Conga. Everyone knows the conga.
Oh!
Yeah.
That's too bad even to be a bad joke.
Welcome to my world, Robin.
I love it.
Finally, Tom, on a serious note, with respect to the pandemic and so on, presumably people who might be listening to this and they're saying, oh no, in the conga, people usually sort of go wrong in various other bits. Are all the sort of safety checks in place? Because there will be people who will be feeling a bit anxious about getting back to any form of outdoor activity from that point of view, even though it is outdoors, of course. And presumably the indoor section will have also been reduced as well, markedly.
Well, apparently you can fondle your own secretary, so I thought it was perfectly acceptable to do the conga there.
Now, Tom, you may say that, but Robin has the perfect response to that. Robin has actually addressed the case in point of Mr. Hancock. And I think, Robin, you need to share for Tom. He obviously hasn't caught this particular show, and Chloe might not have either. What was your official take as an ex-civil servant on what was actually happening in that particular instance?
I have analysed the photo on the front page of The Sun and media worldwide, and I've come to the conclusion that in his defence, he was basically, he checked very closely to see if her mask had lost its integrity, while simultaneously, because he multitasks this Matt Hancock, he was frisking her to see if she had a spare mask in her back pocket.
That's brilliant.
Very good, Robin. Very good.
How could you have doubted him at all? You know, at least Mr. Javid's doing something completely different.
Well, I reckon that the only reason that MPs call each other the Right Honourable is because nobody else will.
Yeah. And so it goes. Chloe, I'm going to, apart from saying yorkmaze.com, the go-to place for tickets and everything else, presumably, Tom, is that right?
Indeed, and the tickets are all online now, so you can no longer walk up on the day and try your luck. So you do need to buy them online before you come to make sure that we're not oversubscribed.
This is very true. So, Chloe, would you like to throw those last two questions to Tom after a wee gap for yourself and, as I say, nigh on a year as far as Tom's been concerned? But there were several attempts in betwixt times, but our schedules just weren't connecting.
Yes. So, Tom, have you had a reasonably lovely Zoom and will you be joining us back soon?
As always, I must go and attend to my giant animatronic props. King Corn is rattling his cage. I can hear him in the background. So, yes, it's been brilliant. Wonderful. It's been wonderful as usual. And would hope to see you all down here in the summer at some point, if you're allowed out.
Author of the Week with Jessica Burtis, Alex Lefchuk, and, of course, another sensationally talented purveyor of perfect prose.
But who's the author?
Let's find out.
She's back. She's returned. We're delighted that she's back for the third segment of the Midweek Drive. It's that awesome writer of magical material, with indeed the fifth in the series coming through in the very near future. It's Catherine Hudson. How are you, Catherine?
I'm doing well, Alex. Thank you. How are you?
Splendid. Delighted. Now, I've actually just had an extraordinary sort of experience because I have to pull out some of the sort of details on the web, and obviously authors are all over the web these days and so on. And I came across this little thing from MindDog TV. Good heavens, you deserve an award for coping with that. I mean, unbelievable. You know, I mean, I won't sort of promote it, but it was extraordinary. I mean, apart from the fact that he spent several times saying, you should change your name, you should have said, it's none of your business how I spell the name, Catherine. Go away now. Anyway, that's just by the way. I just wanted to vent it and get it out on that sort of basis.
That's fine.
It's good to connect with your good self. And just to confirm, are you Vermont? Are you Colorado? Whereabouts are you based at present?
I am in Colorado now, which is where I was from last time. Last time I spoke to you, joined you, I was in Vermont. So we move a lot.
it's very important. And let's face it, a moving target is less easy to hit. So that's the important
very
thing.
True.
Now, having just sort of criticized one of the sort of key things, I'm going to actually fall victim, doubtless, to mispronunciation, because I'll just actually open up this epic urban fantasy conclusion from internationally best-selling author Catherine Hudson. Two worlds collide, the light is gone, and the truth just doesn't exist. Aided by the original order of Lemuria in Zahash, Jessica Northwood finally discovers how far her role as guardian really extends. But to truly fulfill it, she must bend the truth for everyone, and it won't be pretty. Now, is it Lemuria and is it Zahash that's actually there? Or have I completely mispronounced that?
No, Lemuria is correct. So well done on that. And Zahash is
Zahash. Yeah, because I was thinking it's like Zahadoom in Babylon 5, which you're probably too young to remember, but there was a line called Zahadoom there. So, but that was with a Z or a Z. And Zahash, I thought, well, this is it's an XA, so maybe it's working on that basis. I don't know why we're getting into that line of things, but I just thought it was important. How has the last year been for yourself, Catherine, as a writer, and indeed as having moved into a whole new world?
Yes, we did actually just move to Colorado from Vermont just a few days over exactly a year ago. So that was interesting to move across the country in the middle of a pandemic. We were actually all ready to go to move to Mexico. That did not pan out, so we had to change our plans. it's been a year of being really adaptable and flexible. And on the professional side of things, the last year has been fantastic with my projects. I launched the, well, first through fourth books in the Accessory to Magic series. And then the fifth actually just came out on June 24th, very recently. And that series has gotten more traction and fans getting super excited than any of my other work to date, and that has been very, very exciting.
The quality is there. I can't believe it's 2 years since you made your debut on the Midweek Drive back on the 4th of April 2019, when we first featured your good self. And then, of course, we went into full lockdown procedures with respect to the 24th of July, and the magic just continues ever onwards. So that's the important thing. In more ways than one, magic as a writer, magic as a creative thought, the kind of magic which creative writer extraordinaire and the head of the School of English and Journalism, Professor Jason Whittaker, would have said, yes, we need more of this, Catherine. It's absolutely delighted to connect with you. Jason, welcome to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
Hello. Very well, thank you. How's everybody else?
I'm personally just delighted I managed to get the pronunciation of Catherine's latest characters sorted through. So that's good on that system. But let's turn to Gabriella, because you're sitting there quite nicely, Gabriella, somebody who's on the cusp of going into your third year as a journalism student, just outside the joys of Ipswich. Have you got any questions you want to put to Catherine at this moment?
Hi, Catherine. It's nice to meet you. I was just going to ask, well, what Alex was doing there, I'm probably going to do the wrong pronunciation as well of the names, but how did you actually come up with those names? Like, is it Lemuria? That might be wrong, but...
No, that's it. You got it. I don't exactly have a process for coming up with the names that I do. There's a point to the word Lemuria and then later the Lena Roth, who is a character in the series. Lane, in my mind, the way that I drew from it, meaning light, And that's kind of just a theme that I created throughout the series and the world. I have made up bits and pieces of my own language. And it works well for me, but I do have to keep a story Bible going, especially through a series with all of the words and, you know, picking apart bits and pieces so that my readers who are particularly astute may pick up on the fact that some words have certain meanings throughout the story. But it's not based on anything else.
Words are very significant, as indeed Chloe Rose will also manifest from that point of view. Welcome back, Chloe. We've just been talking, of course, to the York Maze people and Tom Piercy of that point of view. Here we are into dark fantasy. Chloe, I think you're quite a dark fantasy soul at heart as well. Is that not the case?
Absolutely. I might be bright and sunshine, but really, oh, I like to go into the realms of magic, you know, and reading about your book as well, you know, Spell Cascade, I thought, oh my goodness, this sounds really good. The main character, Jessica, and is she, you know, I want to know more about this. I fancy reading this myself. Kat, is this about, can I say Catherine or Kat?
Either. I am good with either. Whatever you like.
You know, where did sort of what happens? Is she in charge of the sort of gateway? I'm kind of trying to figure out because I've just read a little bit on it, but I'd love more information.
Absolutely. She we meet Jessica in book one as she is she's a newly institutionalized witch. She just got out of magical prison 6 months beforehand, and she's trying to find a job. Anything that'll work. It's hard to keep a job when someone just comes out of serving a sentence. And she stumbles into a magical bank that was, they put out an ad for an apprentice. She just thinks she's going to get a job. And through a series of chaotic and overwhelming events, she finds herself as the owner of Winthrop and Durledge Security Banking. Which also happens to be the fortress, I guess you could say, around the gateway, which is, I don't want to give any spoilers out there, but she has no idea what she's doing.
We can go with that. I mean, I'm just sort of thinking, obviously, Chloe, you've recently graduated. You're now a fully qualified secondary school teacher. You've gone from the other university in Lincoln. I know it's shocking for many people to actually realise that there is a university other than the University of Lincoln, but you have graduated from Bishop Grosseteste. So well done again on that. I'll bring in Jason briefly on this particular point of view, because apart from that sort of the heading off into vocationality areas, what are your thoughts on dark fantasy and, of course, the creativity that Catherine brings to the world?
So I'm first of all, just say I'm a massive fan of all forms of fantasy, actually, in science fiction. Nowhere near as much a buff as Alex is. So it's always a pleasure to find out new authors and new books from Alex in particular. I think... Actually, I'd like to give an example, which is a very, very old one and not usually considered in terms of fantasy, but is the story of Beowulf. So the oldest poem that we have in English, going back to sometime around the 8th century. And of course, you know, sort of it deals with this creature, Grendel, who is terrorizing the halls of Heorots until the hero Beowulf comes along and dismembers him in fairly gruesome fashion, it must be said. And actually, there was an essay, a famous essay by Tolkien sometime in the mid-war period called Beowulf, the Monster and the Critics, in which said when people were trying to read Beowulf in terms to, you know, to find out how Anglo-Saxons lived and the ancestors were, etc., they missed the point. What people in the so-called Dark Ages wanted was they wanted to be scared witless. They wanted to have these stories of monsters and fantastical creations. And, you know, the book ends with, you know, Beowulf being slain by a dragon as he kills it as well, which became immensely influential to Tolkien himself. So, first of all, that simple fact of storytelling, since as long as we've told stories, has usually involved, you know, whether it's gods and mythologies or creatures, has this fantasy element. But also, when you're gathered around, you know, that almost primal instinct of sitting around the fire in the dark, it's amazing how often we want to tell stories that actually scare I'll try not to swear on radio, scare the life out of us. because that's actually the kind of the catharsis, the entertainment, the feelings that we have out of these. So fantasy, and in particular dark fantasy, I'm obviously going on here into horror, which is another of my pet likes. These are incredibly important to the fundamentals of storytelling.
Is that something you go for, Catherine? I mean, I'm looking at here your wildly messed up heroes, excruciating circumstances, impossible decisions, and happily never afters. That could always be Jason Whittaker's life story as head of School of English and Journalism, really. You know, excruciating characters, excruciating circumstances, impossible decisions, and happily never afters. I thought you were writing his biography. Anyway, Catherine, is that something that resonates with yourself in terms of Jason's description of Beowulf and so on?
Absolutely. I love Beowulf, and I was thinking before Jason got into it how violent and gruesome that poem really is. And that is just part of why I enjoy dark fantasy so much and dark fiction, to expose that darker primal side, which is actually a lot of the struggles that Jessica Northwood, the character in the Accessory to Magic series, goes through herself, trying to balance that primal darkness and the rage and the power that comes with, you know, letting out our inner Beowulf, really, right? And I do so much enjoy diving down deep into that darkness. It's a place within my characters and a place within myself that I feel a lot of other people are either unaware of or still unwilling to explore on their own. And if I can help shed some light on the phenomenal process of exploring and discovering one's own darkness and learning how to incorporate it and use it to one's advantage, through my work, that is a big part of what I hope to do. And I just get a kick out of writing violence and fight scenes, not gratuitously for no other reason than to put them in there, but that's one of my favorite parts.
2 decades, Catherine, 2 decades you've been writing now as an active member of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America and the Horror Writers Association. So it all connects there. Gabriella, does this frighten you? Does it frighten you in Ipswich? Don't be afraid. But what are your thoughts on this one?
Well, no, I absolutely love, like, I'm a huge fan of like fantasies and stuff like that. I love fantasy movies as well. Have you ever thought in your writing whether to make sort of go to screenplay maybe? And maybe you could make Jessica Northwood, you could make her into a movie character. Have you ever thought of that?
It definitely crosses my mind. I've had a number of readers actually reach out to me and tell me that they hope this became a show or a movie. And honestly, I haven't really seriously considered doing any work on my own to adapt this to a screenplay. And that is merely because I have no interest in writing screenplays or a script or anything. Fiction is where my skills excel, and I feel like I would be doing a disservice to an adaptation if I were to attempt it. That's not to say that if the opportunity magically fell into my lap, I wouldn't jump on it.
Who do you think you would cast in your...
Ooh, as Jessica Northwood. That's, you know, I have not thought about it in that much detail to even come up with anyone to answer that question for you. I'm sorry.
It's an opening line which we can certainly pursue. Now, I've got to find out basically how are your dogs coming on, Catherine? How are Sadie and how's Bruce Willis? I'll say that again. Sadie and Bruce Willis.
Yes, and it is one word, Bruce Willis.
Of course.
Make that clear. It's very important. So, distinguishing from the actor. They're doing all right. Bruce Willis is just his normal goofy, thick-headed, boneheaded self. He still runs into doors and tables, and Sadie has actually joined him there. She just recently went fully blind in the past couple of months, so we're working through it.
Well, I mean, Jason usually lets his canine friends in on staff meetings, which obviously perk up everybody, Jason. So, but you know, is your canine friend around at present?
He just ran out the room barking, actually. That's why I've been keeping everything on mute, actually.
He's probably heard Sadie and Bruce Willis. Oh,
no, this is Magnus, who often wonders why I sit in this chair staring at the screen.
He's so cute.
That we keep. Yeah, so he has an older sister who's very old now. She's 17 years old and half blind and just wanders around waiting to be fed. And a younger brother who he and fights on a regular basis, actually, thus disrupting any meeting that I may have. But yeah, say hi, Magnus. He goes, let me down. I don't want to be on screen.
See, there was I thinking Magnus was actually named after Magnus Robot Fighter, a cartoon character from the 1960s. But apparently Magnus Magnusson.
Magnus Magnusson, of course. But that will mean nothing to anybody who's not our age, Alex.
I don't know. YouTube can work wonders these days, Jason. That's what I've said. And I frequently say that, as Gabriella will attest to. Histories of journalism notwithstanding. Chloe, any questions you'd like to put to either Catherine or indeed Jason?
Absolutely. This one's for Catherine. I wanted to ask, do you believe in the beyond? You know, that sort of, I'm just intrigued why you write about magic. Is it just because you just love the fantasy side of it? Or is it that you believe maybe in witchcraft or maybe in, you know, something beyond? I'm just intrigued. I thought I'd ask.
That's a great question. I wouldn't say that I believe in magic. I believe in the magic and the power of intention and of self-awareness and of putting out into the universe and that universal energy of life our hopes and dreams and frustrations. And I definitely have had some rather extreme and surprising, but not quite surprising, spiritual experiences that, you know, over the course of years and years have folded themselves into my own personal belief system about how we're all connected and what that then, in my opinion, requires of us as individuals in what we provide in our lives and what we're doing day in and day out.
Having said that, Catherine, I have to say that never, ever in your most villainous aspects of villainous creativity or characters could you actually come up with somebody like that. You know, a person actually wearing the England shirt over his, I mean, that is terrifying. You know, quite literally, probably the most terrifying thing I've actually seen in my entire teaching career. I mean, I don't know, Jason.
What about, did you see him on the giant flag, though? You know, sort of on the huge England flag. Thumbs up, looking like a pound shop Winston Churchill who's got lost on, you know, the Battle of D-Day. Yes, incredible. This
Catherine is the person that we have to actually look after as our leader in this part of the world, and it's not good in any way, shape or form. And quite literally, it actually makes us go a full 360. It's not good. We're referring, of course, to our Prime Minister wearing an England shirt with his current wife beside him. It's not good. I mean, Gabriella, apologies for that. I really should have put a warning up before we actually went down that particular line. But Gabriella, have you got any questions you want to put to either Jason or Catherine at the moment, or Chloe?
I was just going to ask to Catherine and Jason, what top tips do you have for young writers that want to get into the business?
That is a good question. The number one tip that I will always give for anyone wanting to start writing is to read a lot. Read all genres, at least, you know, try them out. All forms of literature, fiction, nonfiction, and then whittle it down to the things that you enjoy, that you want to create more of, and look at the, you know, your predecessors, who has come before, what have they done, how have they done it, and, you know, I wouldn't say try to copy anyone, but it's so important to have a well-rounded view of what makes good fiction work. what makes good characters. And beyond that, honestly, I'm sure it's been said over and over and over, writing as much as possible, whether or not you think it is actually good, whether or not you're proud of it. And I will say, I have written many things that will never see the light of day and I'm not proud of. And that's how we grow and improve. It's like learning any other skill. Those would be my top two tips. And I guess if I was going for number three, I would say it's a long game. It's not a one-off, you write one book and it gets picked up and published and you're making millions. It is a long game. If you're passionate about making this your career, to get into the industry of the business in any way, it will require diligence and lots of patience and yes, a thick skin, and a willingness to keep going no matter what.
And of course, there is a fourth aspect, given that we've had an open day at the University of Lincoln. Sign up for our communications and public relations course, or indeed a creative writing course at Lincoln as well. Jason, does that resonate in terms of advice that you would also echo?
I'd give a couple. Well, I do, because I teach creative writing a lot. So a couple of tips I offer. A starting point, always recognize that the writing process and the editing process are two separate things. Both are absolutely vital. A thing I encounter again and again is that students bring in the editor too quickly. This is no good. I can't do this. And actually, to write fluently, and I've written a lot of books now, you have to trust your subconscious at some level. You have to get in a state of flow. You have to simply get something down on the page. Mm. But the editor is really important. And the editor is not the critic. The editor is not there to tell you how rubbish something you're doing is. The editor has a very simple question. How do I make this better? And even if you think you've written something great, you can always, always improve it. In fact, there's one suggestion that publishing a book is basically the moment you decide, I'm just going to stop now. Because actually, I've got a book coming out next year, which I realized I've been writing. I started writing it in 2008 and I never spend that long a book, but I just kept adding to it and improving and changing. But generally, you need to write, you need to trust your subconscious, but you also then need that very conscious critical editor who comes in and every page goes, how can I make this better? The second comment I make, and this fits with the long game, really, that's really important, persistence. Persistence without arrogance. I say again and again, loads of people, well, this is brilliant. Why am I not being recognized? Do you know what? It's luck, very often. There are certain things that take place in the industry whereby, for example, publishers very consciously decide they're going to have each publisher each season will decide this is their big book. And if you're not that big book, tough. There's nothing you can do. You might be one of those, rare exceptions that comes by word of mouth. But in terms of marketing and promotion, publishers do this very consciously, and they actually stick to the one big book for several reasons. One, because it costs a lot of money. Two, if they have more than one big book, that means that actually they're going to dissipate their energy. And as much as anything, this kind of marketing and promotion is not about, it's not about the author. It's about the publishing company. They always say, look, we can afford to waste all this money, actually, because they very often won't make it back. A Suitable Boy, Vikram Seth. After that came out, an exceptional book, absolutely astonishing. His next novel had an advance, a seven-figure advance, over $1 million. The publishers knew they were never going to make that back. They just wanted to show off that they could afford to spend this kind of money. But they don't do. But the fact that they do that on one person means they do not. They really do not do that on the rest of their authors. You will spend a lot of your time speaking to people, plugging your book, trying to sell it, etc. Because that's the job of being a writer. I don't know what your experience is, Kat, but I find that writing a book is actually quite good fun. Selling a book, boy, there's the labour, and that's where you just I think lots of people have fancy. I'm going to write a novel. I'm going to be the next J.K. Rowling. And actually, for most of us who write books, you can build up. It's a great thing to do to write a book. It's an absolutely fantastic thing to do. Getting rich quick is rarely what happens, and there's almost never the reason to do it.
as ever, sage words there. And Jason, you obviously earned the right to promote your latest book on William Blake. Would you like to actually just share that with the whole team once again? It is, of course, an epic. Man.
Of course I am. So, Divine Images, The Life and Work of William Blake. As my one and only Amazon reviewer says, forget the words, it's just full of pretty pictures. But yeah, for a labour of love.
Let's turn back to Catherine for the moment, because looking obviously at the Pentology in many ways, Witching Vault, Cursed Fae, Secret Coin, Poison Veil, of course, being the first four, do people need to start at the beginning, or can you dip into any of those particular aspects? What would your advice be in terms of following the adventures?
That I would highly recommend starting with book one. There are so many little strings of mystery that go through the entire series from the first book to the fifth book. And just when one question is answered, two more pop up in its place. And I would not be surprised that anyone starting in the middle of the series would be completely lost. So it is a beginning to end series, yes.
So using that line, run the witching vault, protect the gateway, say please, and don't get killed. You could have actually used that advice for your Zoom or your YouTube thing with Mind Dog yesterday, really, and it would have worked okay. It could have wrapped it up perfectly. Sorry. I get very annoyed when I see authors or indeed our guests sort of being sort of put into a situation where I just think, no, you should have virtually just sort of said, no, just go away. The mustache wasn't good either. Not with yourself, obviously. There we are.
Thank Gabriella, you. Yeah.
Gabriella, any other thoughts or questions you've got for the team?
Oh, well, the thing is, I've been thinking about this for ages. I don't know why, but if you were stuck on a desert island and you had to take a book with you, which book would you take and why? This is open to everyone, so.
Chloe, we'll start with you.
Ooh. Trying to think of it, actually.
We'll let you get a few more moments to think about it.
Yeah, Jason, I'm thinking about it.
Onwards, will it be William Blake or will it
oh,
be...
Oh, come on, Alex. Of course, it will always be the complete works of William Blake till the day I die. I do read other books, but that is simply the one I return to with the most pleasure.
There's a very good one called The Witching Vault, which is well worth accessing. I think you should actually go for that personally, but there we are. Catherine, from your own point of view, any book which can you say, yeah, this would be mine?
Yes, I may have to. Well, I guess if Jason is going with the complete works, then I would also say I would make sure that it exists. I'm not sure if it does, but all seven of Stephen King's Dark Tower series combined into one massive volume. I have already read that series 10 times. And I would not have an issue only reading that for the rest of my life on a deserted island.
And yet the Idris Elba adaptation just wasn't the same at all, was it really? Quite disappointing. Never mind.
It was not the same. I do love Idris Elba, and he played the character phenomenally. That's what I will say.
Okay. Dark Tower. I can sense William Blake sort of saying, yeah, Dark Tower, I can go with that. Just a thought there. Chloe, have you thought about it yourself though?
Yes. It's actually, I should really read more than I do at the moment, but I started reading a book called Noughts and Crosses, which I really love. And I was actually reading it to the secondary school kids. And it's come to be sort of part of their education, and I think it's really important at the moment, you know, in society, to sort of understand, you know, everyone's views and equality and raise awareness of that as well. And I think that's a great book, so that's probably something that I would take, because I've been reading it and I enjoy it. So there you go. Or maybe one of Jason's books or one of Catherine's books I could take now.
Yeah, Chloe, you'll always say that. I mean, you're just so good at that. That's why we appreciate it on the programme. It's great. Likewise, if it was music, obviously people would actually get CDs from Chloe Rose. And your latest single, of course, is?
Latest single is Sky is Falling, but I've got a new single coming out in the next month or two, so very exciting thing.
Well, we'll hear The Sky is Falling shortly. But we have actually reached the stage where, Chloe, before we actually go off to another person who was born in Colorado, now lives in Los Angeles, and is doing her own sort of stint as well from that point of view. That's Erica. who's Erika Duke, in fact. Chloe, would you like to put the last two questions, re Zoomers, etc., to the team, starting off with whomever you wish?
Absolutely. I'd love to start off with Catherine, just to say that have you had a lovely time during the Zoom call, and will you be returning to us very soon, and everybody else too?
Yes, absolutely. I have enjoyed joining you guys from the very first time. I do really like being able to see everyone's faces this time around. It's fun.
It's technology. Don't worry about Gabriella. She's just in a very dark part of Ipswich. You know, they don't have any lights there, so it happens.
Yeah, we've got no lights.
Exactly. Anyway, moving on. Jason, has it been good for you?
It's been good. It's been a pleasure as always, Alex. I'm looking forward to joining you again.
Excellent. Gabriella, I take it you've enjoyed your sort of segment before you join us for our Movies and Royals feature, of course, coming up on Sunday, in which Black Widow is going to be focused on, together with, of course, a tribute to Richard Donner. So we'll be joining us for that.
Yes, I will be joining on Sunday, and it was lovely to speak to you all.
Well, there we are. Chloe, good for your good self?
Oh, absolutely. Love to speak to you all. It was great fun.
Excellent. Chloe Rose, Gabriella Van Genians, Jason Whittaker, Professor Jason Whittaker, of course, and Catherine Hudson. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And watch out for those witching vaults and more. Actually, Catherine, before we go, how can people actually get hold of some of your fabulous material, as well as going to CatherineHudsonsFiction.com?
Yes, that is my website. And my books can be found everywhere, at all major retailers, Amazon, Apple Books, Barnes Noble, Kobo, and always, you know, your local bookstore, bookshop.org is a great place to give back to local bookstores wherever you are when you purchase paperbacks there. And then they're available in ebook as well, half just on Amazon, the other half in the same places online.
It's fantastic. All of this, and possibly one or two, will have virtual paw prints from Bruce Willis as well. All one word, obviously. Yes. Catherine, take care. Be well. Be happy.
Thank you.
When the sky is dream. Look out the window.